Yes, hello, Gristlers. We're back. We're overcoming all sorts of technical difficulties here to bring you another week of The Gristle. We're going to be talking JobKeeper numbers. We're going to be talking Albo. We're going to be working out what's going on with this stoush between the states, and even Pauline Hanson gets a look in. So stay tuned for all this coming up on The Gristle. And in the studios right now, well, right around Australia in the studios, we have the Punditaker in the beautiful riverside city of Perth.
I've closed my borders.
You've closed your borders. Warm Lettuce, you're back with us as well.
That's right. I'm back.
Hey,
I'm
back.
Too long.
And we've sent out the bat signal for bat suit. Have you got us there?
I certainly do. Yep, come all the way.
Down in Melbourne. That's great. I'm glad we've got everything covered here.
I don't know how popular bat soup is at the moment. I mean, it's pretty controversial. But we're certainly very progressive here on the Gristle, so bat soup is welcome.
We are very progressive.
I'm glad you can take me.
Now, I'd like to open up proceedings with the job keeper numbers. They appear to have gone a bit over the top here, $60 billion overestimate. Josh Frydenberg saying, oh, God, these bloody businesses couldn't get the filling in of their forms right. But on the other hand, we're going to have a lot more money now, aren't we, Warm Lettuce?
I think we're going to have tens of billions of dollars more, which, you know, is only the case because their scheme is so miserable that it failed. It didn't do what it was supposed to do. Businesses just said, oh, I can't be bothered filling this out. I'd love to sack a few people. So they did. Wait, imagine designing a scheme that's so incompetent that when you tell people, we'll pay for your staff's wages, you go, nah. So this is this. Oh, don't think it's for me. Come on.
Yeah, look, Undertaker, it's just not on to cut out this scheme in September, is it? We've got the money.
Well, they there was all this talk. We were being primed for 6 months of lockdown by the Prime Minister, the Prime Minister, and, talk that, if you take the pedal off the gas too soon, you cause the economy to splutter. And now they're just looking to essentially take all the petrol out of the tank. It's crazy. And then layered on top of this, as Warm Lettuce said, the fact that this government that reckons it's a good economic manager can't even add up properly. I mean, your average homeschooled kid knows how to count to $60 billion. These guys don't seem to be able to.
And bat suit, you are being homeschooled still in Melbourne, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually living with a couple of teachers at the moment, one primary, one secondary. But it's not the Geelong archipelago that everyone tries to make out it is. It's not too bad down here at the moment.
It's the Geelong archipelago.
Well, I'm hoping that people in Melbourne can fill out a few of their forms right. But I think Michael McCormack could be looking for a job seeker payment pretty soon. Albo has got stuck into Michael McCormack over his remarks about people getting their hair on fire over climate change. Batsuit, have you heard about this in the wilds of Geelong?
I read the news about that. I mean, I'm a scientist by trade, so hearing all sorts of quasi-climate denialism come out of the Nationals is always a little bit of an eye-roller for me, especially when it's so distasteful.
I mean, they're used to denying things. I mean, they're also in denial about the fact that they're a minor party ignored by the Liberals. But, it's not too much of a step.
Is this McCormack's attempt to develop a personality? Because his seat is Riverina for punters that may not be familiar with the man that looks like a knee, and he's under threat from Barnaby Joyce because he's considered as having no personality. Yet if you look at where he comes from, they've been severely hit by the bushfires. And, you know, many, many people, although obviously we're focused on the corona crisis, many people are doing it tough because of the impact of the bushfires and the poor performance of the government. And
can I just add to that, that every time the Greens or someone on the left brings up climate change, just after the bushfires, for example, it's like, now's not the time to talk about it. We're in the recovery period from a crisis. You're just politicising it. But when they bring it up, right, when they bring up climate change in the middle of COVID, you know, nobody says, oh, don't you think it's an inappropriate time and you should be focused on something else? No, nobody ever says that to them. I think it's hypocritical.
Oh, I think it is as well. I mean, the fires themselves were quite a Rorschach test. I mean, you saw what you wanted politically inside them. Like, if you like accepted climate change, there were evidence of climate change and government policy failure. But at the same time, if you didn't believe that, you just saw a natural disaster and just people overblowing it. Like, you could literally see your house burn down and you could come to two vastly different political decisions on how that actually happened. It was really quite an amazing sort of Rorschach test about what was going on with these fires a few months ago.
I mean, it's interesting because you mentioned there, Savin, that Albo was criticising him. But the other thing
that's very polite. That's a very polite way to put it, Undertaker.
It is hard for the leader of the opposition in the current climate to get a run. What's interesting, though, is that there's a bigger piece about what the fault lines politically are going to be. We saw Albo give a speech recently. We see this basically with fault lines, with where the politics is going to go through 2020 and 2021 up to the next election, which we think will be next year, which is essentially the Liberals are gagging like a Rottweiler on heat to cut this big spending socialist program that they've been forced to engage in, whereas Labor's like got raging passion for keeping the socialist planning that's going on, and so it's a real tough one, because if they take these job keeper and job seeker payments away and satisfy their mates in far right think tanks, they may actually get a very rude shock that even though people may vote for the coalition when times aren't that bad, they will probably vote out a government if they're unemployed and they can't get a job.
That's true for job seeker as well as job keeper, because, of course, they increase the dole. And there's a lot of people that probably haven't had to use Centrelink before. And I actually think if they cut it right down, and they're going to get a backlash. But maybe actually people will be more sympathetic to the idea of a dole increase, because they'll go, how can anybody live on this? And people that follow it closely know that you can't live on it. But I think they'd really be making a tactical mistake if they did.
There's another side of it as well. It's the fact that the job seeker currently has suspended the whole, you've got to look for X number of jobs per fortnight to actually maintain it. But that expires in September. But if we are truly heading towards record levels of unemployment, that's just going to be an absolute nightmare for people, as well as the administration and costs they're actually having to actually process it.
Well, that's right. And everyone who doesn't have a job, when the coalition starts to pull out their old tricks about calling everyone that doesn't have a job a dole bludger, they'll be walking a very fine line. And I recommend that they call the Prime Minister's office, indeed call every coalition office, and ask for a job as a political staffer. Because if they get 6 million calls, and they may change their tune a little bit.
Yes, well, I think on that point, we might just take a short break, and we'll be back in a few minutes with a lot more of the gristle here on 2SER 107.3. Back in the studio here, I'm Starvin Marvin, here with the Punditaker, Warm Lettuce and Batsuit, all on their lines in various states around the nation, bringing to you the things that you should be chewing on here in the gristle. Now, in Western Australia and in Queensland, we've got borders closed, Punditaker. Mark McGowan is getting very angry with our Gladys Berejiklian here in New South Wales. Can you give us a rundown on why he's so upset?
Oh, look, yeah, he's not. He's riding high in the polls for his strong performance, essentially pulling up the drawbridge so that the plague-riddled population of New South Wales can't come over and infect the good burghers of Western Australia. And this has caused a lot of consternation with the coalition. You know, I mean, it's essentially down party lines with the coalition and Pauline Hanson calling for borders to be reopened. Who would have thought Pauline Hanson would call for that? Whereas the Labor states that actually care of people that have died are saying, no, it's time to be more cautious. And this has led to a tiff among members of the National Cabinet with the WA Premier giving the New South Wales Premier quite a lot of shit for their woeful handling of the Ruby Princess affair, which fundamentally led to the deaths of a number of people and the spreading of the virus. So things are heating up, and of course the Queensland Premier is not taking any crap from her southern colleagues either, and so there's a real fight brewing.
And look, warm letters, I think it's pretty easy to pull up a drawbridge if you're in Western Australia. I mean, there's only one road goes there, isn't there? Does anybody care?
Well, I don't know, maybe. I wouldn't mind going to West Australia to escape the plague rivers, as Punditaker put it. But look,
By the time they get this message in three hours.
Queensland's a bit of a different story, though, because the Premier came out and said, I'm not just keeping it up a little bit longer. She said it would probably be in September. Now, maybe that has something to do with an election in October and wanting it all to open up right before everyone goes to the polls. I mean, that's what a cynic would say. But I think I think she's really underestimated how hard the tourism sector has been hit in Queensland. And normally, you know, middle of winter, people from down south like to go up north to escape the cold. I'm not sure she's really made the right call there. If you're thinking about economics, I understand that they might be worried about, you know, New South Wales and Victoria, but how many active cases do we really have at this point? You know, just if people are that worried, say, okay, you can do the domestic flight, but you're going to take the test. We were going to test you on the flight, and you get a response, what, in 30 minutes now or something? You know, so by the time they land, you know whether you've got to lock everyone up or not. There's ways around it, surely.
Well, I think Pauline Hanson has already ruled this as unconstitutional. She's been able to give some very sage legal advice to various states and high courts around the land. Batsuit, are you impressed with the performance of Pauline Hanson's legal knowledge there?
Only about as much as I'm impressed by her understanding of military submarines. I mean, she thought they could only stand the water for 20 minutes.
that's from the submarines that she used in her bath, was it?
No, this was going back to the Senate inquiry about purchasing submarines for defence, and she had earned 30 cents.
Ah,
right. They'd only stay underwater for 20 minutes and then had to come up for air like some sort of sea creature. That's great.
Yeah, it was quite embarrassing.
So Bats, if you're down in Victoria, speaking of opening the borders, it seems pretty clear to me that your Premier has opened the borders very wide for Chinese Communist Party influence. And this, of course, was another big issue this week. Daniel Andrews coming out and saying that we've been demonising the CCP for how it handled the coronavirus. How do you feel about that as a Victorian?
I do disagree with those things. We do need to be a little bit more cautious about criticising China. I mean, especially when they still have quite a lot of the early people who were whistleblowers still locked up, as far as we know. That doesn't exactly inspire confidence. We're getting the full story.
Have they still got their organs?
Well, it sounds like Daniel Andrews loosening the belt and paving the road for China. It's, I seem to recall Warm lettuce and that soup that our southern brethren went off the reservation and signing some agreement to get a piece of the Belt and Road action, which is, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with, essentially China's civilization building exercise where they go around and build roads and ports and stuff in poor countries and then tell them what to do. So
My concern is at the moment is that the as an academic and understanding these sort of positions juxtaposed to each other is that the Andrews government has just given $350 million to the state, Victorian state universities, which is great because the federal government is really not lifting too much of a finger to help them at all. The trouble is that $350 million is the deficit of Monash alone. And as we know, a lot of this deficit has come about because we're not getting international students. So when I hear talks about, like, you know, they're wanting to strengthen their relations and don't pick on China, and then all of a sudden they're giving all this money to universities, and it's pretty much, and there's no guarantee that it's going to be towards keeping academic jobs, but it might just be well and truly to just keep all those buildings finished to, you know, attract more foreign students in the following years, and we're not actually having a proper time to learn about what's going on.
Mm.
Yes, well, just moving on to something else. Can you hear me there? Yep, sorry, I'm just checking to see whether everything was still going. The federal court has issued a ruling today, or yesterday I think it was, wasn't it, that gives casuals sick leave. This is a big, big change and bit of a win for the CFMEU, Punditaker?
Yeah, indeed. So this is about, many listeners, no doubt, and many young people in particular will be casual workers, and not only casual workers, will have worked for a number of years in effectively full-time roles, but being classified and paid as casuals. And this, you know, while in some sense the rate of pay can be a bit higher as a casual, we all know that the real driver is effectively it makes it easier for businesses to let people go and fire them. And the court found that if it looks like a permanent worker, if it smells like a permanent worker, then it is a permanent worker. It doesn't matter whether you call it a casual worker. So it predictably the business will be jumping up and down like a chimp at the start of 2001 about this. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it's interesting because it actually portends for the industrial relations fights that are about to ensue, and the Conservatives are going to have to watch their step very carefully because, again, in times of labour market stress, when people can't get a job and they're feeling the heat, people don't want to hear rhetoric or see policies which make it easy to fire people. So it could actually change the political, it could have an impact on the politics over the next 18 months.
I'm worried about how gameable it is by employers, right? So if all of a sudden, if it smells like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck sort of thing. But my thing is, if employers start screwing around with like rosters and things like that to try and get around the new definitions, how gameable is it by unscrupulous employers? That's my fear of it.
You could just say, all right, well, I'll give you different shifts every week, and that gives you a lot less of certainty to those workers. But can someone explain, does it just apply to casual workers that work full-time sort of hours, or does it apply to someone who's maybe got the same hours but every week and it doesn't change, but it's like 10 hours? So I'm unclear on that. I don't know if maybe one of you guys has an answer.
I thought it was the same shift. That's the way I read it. But is that what your understanding is, Punditaker?
I'm not entirely sure, actually. I haven't read the document, but I haven't had the pleasure of 14 days in quarantine to read the court judgment, indeed.
So, and we're all under this same problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's effectively casual workers who have been in ongoing casual employment, basically. So again, I think it's this, if it walks like a duck issue. And look, this is not a new concept. It's been part of labour law in this country for a number of years that, you know, employers, well, that there are rules to try and stop employers from circumventing the classification of people as permanent or full time, but I think what Batsoup and Warmer say is valid. There's a question then as to what funny business employers will try to avoid the classification. Then let me tell you, they will pay lawyers a lot of money. There are big law firms and lawyers who have paid a lot of money to work out how to screw you on your shift so you're not classified as permanent or full-time. So it's a real thing.
So it's a really big win for the legal profession, isn't it, Punditaker?
Oh, look, you know, anytime lawyers come out on top, I'm always cheering from the rafters.
That's right. So that's all good news. All good news for the legal our legal eagles out there.
What is interesting, though, of course, you might say, should the reverse apply, which is if someone has a full-time job but does no work, should they be classified as casual and be able to get the boot? And, of course, I'm thinking here of the member for New England, Barnaby Joyce, who you may recall was ambassador for the drought, was it? But was supposed to produce a report, but just sent a few text messages, which were probably directed to a former staffer, and accidentally went to the Prime Minister and just happened to have his thoughts on the drought. So, you know, I do wonder whether there's scope there for this to be used in a positive way for society.
Yes, well, certainly, there certainly could be. Now, I don't know whether any of you people in other states have had these same sort of problems, but in New South Wales here, particularly Batsuit and Punditaker, we're getting stung by huge amounts of fines from speed and red light cameras. In fact, $21 million for the state government, which is it's a record in March, just when we were getting locked down. What are states going to do with all this money, Warm Lettuce?
Oh, I don't know. Probably spend it all on some frivolous pork barreling program, sports grants, and marginal electorates or something like that. That's always a good place to start. But look, you know, I think the real reason we're seeing this is because their stamp duty has collapsed. Of course, to get money from stamp duty, property taxes, you need to have people selling properties, and you need to have the constant Ponzi scheme of price rises, and that's not happening. So they're very low on money. So they're just fining everybody because they're desperate not to be seen as bad economic managers. And I actually don't think anyone gives a hoot, right? Like, if you turn around and said, oh, look, we've got a massive deficit, nobody's going to say why, right? Like, it's pretty obvious. You just lock them all in their houses for 3 or 4 months. So, you know, I don't know what they're worried about. But I do think it's poor form to find people, especially with a lot of unemployed people out of work, all of that. Like, I'd want to make sure that there's some sort of hardship, get out of jail scheme in place for those that lets people off, because otherwise you're kicking them when they're down. And I think that's pretty horrible.
Maybe they should just make very wealthy people pay the fines of the people.
I think that's a much better idea, and I'll be sending my fine over to you, Punditaker. I was, you know, just 5 minutes over and $110. I don't think it's very fair. So I'm sure that you wealthy people in those big mining states will be able to help us out over here in the poor old eastern states, COVID-ridden eastern states. You know, you don't know what it's like over here.
we are graced by a couple of very wealthy billionaires, Twiggy Forrest and Kerry Stokes, who make sure that if President Xi ever is in charge here, we will be treated very well in Western Australia because they are taking sycophancy to a new level.
That's right. They're doing very well, and there's usually some sort of consul or ambassador in tow when they arrived anywhere, isn't there?
A few steps behind. I think it's just add water and up pops the consul general.
Yes. Well, seeing we've moved over to China there a bit today, we've got some rather disturbing news that China's decided to get rid of one country, two systems, and just make it one country, one system. The chances of this not going through the Chinese parliament is absolutely, well, it's not a parliament, is it? But the chances of it not happening are like zero. Why do you think this is happening now, Punditaker?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Andy Time is as good as these next to impose your authoritarianism on someone else. But I actually think that the actual backstory is that when you see moves like this, it's actually maybe a sign of anxiety among the leadership in China. Xi Jinping and his buddies, people may not know, but one of his selling points inside China is that he's competent. So he would run on this platform of competency. And the idea there is that China's success over the last 30 years has been due to a competent set of technocrats who have guided the country, and largely successfully. But it's very much the case, I think, that he and his apparatchiks are worried about growing unrest due to people's dissatisfaction with COVID, due to the economic impacts of the virus, which are not being properly reported. And then they see Hong Kong as a potential flashpoint, in the sense that if Hong Kong starts piping up, that may give all those provinces and people out in the rest of China the wrong idea that Chairman Xi should not be chairman for life. So I suspect that's really what's driving this.
And Batsuit, have you got any friends or colleagues expatting around the central area of Hong Kong? Are they worried?
No, but I do have friends who've lived in Hong Kong, and they're very, very, upset and very, very worried about what's going to happen there. It seems that from a strategic point of view, at least, it kind of does make sense when the rest of the world is dealing with other issues, that it would go and force this. It's always really been on China's side that their winning strategy is just to wait and wait, because all the protesters need food, they need to go away, they need to stop protesting at some stage and go and earn money to live themselves. And now you've got this COVID-19 pandemic. It's like the amount of resistance in that is pretty much going to be very little.
Yeah, because no one wants to go out to protest if the person protesting next to you might have COVID. I mean,
hang on a second, Warm Letters. That's very unfair on the Trump voters in the States, and actually some similar type voters in Australia who I think you know are really fighting the good fight, where they are raising the public's awareness of the connection between 5G and coronavirus. Surely they are doing the Lord's work, and they're actually very happy to be breathing in the sweat of their fellow tinfoil hat brigade.
Well, that's great. I've always wanted a return to Darwinism, and I think we'll see natural selection run its course with these people. That's great.
It's already been documented that a lot of those protesters, like in Ohio and everything, they already, some of them are already testing positive and everything from those protests. It's like, wow. You can't argue against science.
It is amazing, the behavioral psychology of the fact that there's a large percentage of, there's a sizable percentage of people in the States who are so emotionally and existentially aligned to their concept of partisanship and being not just pro-Trump, but pro this idea of like anti-weakness and any attempt to having a lockdown as a sign of weakness, that they will literally go out and risk their lives. And these aren't healthy people.
Ultra-libertarian type.
Yeah, and like, they aren't healthy people. I don't know if you looked at them. They're not healthy people.
Yeah, they're not healthy people, but that's about all the time we've got here for you on The Gristle. I've been Zarvin Marvin, of course, been with Punditaker, Warm Letters and Batsuit. It's been great getting back with you this week, Gristlers. We're going to try and do it again next week, and if we can't,